What is it that you do really well? What is one of those areas in your life that you know, hey, this is an area where I'm pretty good. Everything is kind of sweet in this thing. I'm pretty knowledgeable about the subject, whether that's cooking or gardening or whatever it is that your work involves you with. Now, imagine into that situation. With me, it would probably be working on the computer, working away at the diocesan website, coding and programming and making changes and variations and whatnot. Now, Bishop Peter sometimes just, you know, drops into the parish office there in Camden. I can imagine the situation where I've been working away and it's, you know, really frustrating, and you're trying to add a new feature and it's just not working, or making an update and it just keeps failing. And Bishop Peter, who, with all due respect, is a bit clueless when it comes to computers, he walked into my office and said, "Well, Richard, you know, move out of the chair. I'll sit down and I'll get it all working again for you." And I'd be like, "Well, actually, Bishop Peter, I don't think that's such a good idea. The chances are that you're just going to break the whole thing. So please, I'd rather you didn't." It's kind of that situation that Simon Peter is facing here. There's nothing recorded in the Gospels that when the crowd starts pressing in on Jesus as he stands on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, there's no recording of Jesus saying to Simon, "Excuse me, sir, do you mind if I make use of your boat?" He just sees the boat, he jumps in, pushes it a few meters off the shore so he can have that space to preach and teach to the crowd. And then the even more extraordinary thing, that they've worked hard all night long. I can imagine the situation where they've been throwing their nets out into this part of the lake, waiting the appropriate time and then slowly hauling the nets back in. Nothing. Empty. And so they go to another place in the lake. They throw out their nets once again. Wait. Begin the slow process of hauling the nets back in. Again. Nothing. Hour after hour. All night long. And so presumably it's early in the morning, because I've just come back in after this long, fruitless night of working, and they've got nothing to show for it. Nothing to be able to barter with down at the market. Nothing to pay their taxes with. Nothing to provide food for their families for that night. I mean, how frustrating, how annoying, how aggravating after a hard night's work and nothing to show for it. And then this rabbi, this man who perhaps has some skill in the area of working with his hands, working with stone, working with timber, but there's nothing recorded that he had any knowledge whatsoever about fishing. And then he says, "Well, here, get in the boat, come out, and we'll pay out the nets again." Simon, you can hear the frustration, the anguish in his voice, but it's pointless, Lord. It's just pointless. There will be no fish in the middle of the day. If we've worked hard all night in this particular area of the lake and there are no fish that are there to be caught, why would there be any now in broad daylight? But if you say so. And it's that if you say so that changes the whole situation. This sense of openness that Peter has. This ability to be humble and to say, "Lord, Master, you've probably got no idea whatsoever what you're doing, but there's something about you. There's something about the way you teach. There's something about the authority that you have. And so, yeah, I will do it for you. I will put out the nets." And then that turn of events, that incredible catch of fish, where it's not just a few fish, it's a whole school of fish that are in the nets that day. So many that they're just tearing at the fabric of the nets, and it's just too much to be able to contain, and they can't possibly begin even to pull it in, so they have to get the others in the second boat to come and help them to bring in the fish that fill both of these boats. Now, the response of Simon to this is quite extraordinary. The way that he recognizes that this is no ordinary rabbi. This is not someone who just has beginner's luck. This is the Lord himself. Now, in the Gospel of John, this scene takes place at the very end of the Gospels. It takes place after the resurrection, when it's the risen Lord who's speaking to Simon, who's denied him 3 times. And it's then that Simon Peter falls down on his knees, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man." Probably more likely that it did in fact happen at the end of the life of Jesus. Matthew and Mark record a similar story of the call of Simon, but without this particular incident of Simon falling down and just overwhelmed by the presence of Jesus. But the presence of Jesus is the thing that changes Simon. And what do we hear? That Simon and all of his companions don't just leave the nets, don't just leave the boats, but they leave everything. In the Gospel of Luke, that is the true sign of discipleship. They're prepared to set aside every aspect of their lives in obedience to this promise that Jesus makes to them. For now, it's not just fish that you will catch. It's extraordinary and it's wonderful as that is. There's a new objective that I have for you. You will fish for sons and daughters of God. You will open your heart and you will be the one who will lead this mission of the new infant church to bring the souls of men and women into the kingdom of God, to proclaim this freedom, to proclaim this liberation. God acts suddenly in so many ways to break into our lives. It's a similar scene in our first reading today. Isaiah is just there, minding his own business, praying quietly in the temple. Maybe he's just come a few minutes early before a scheduled service. Maybe he's already said his prayers with the rest of the community and he's just waiting there for a few minutes after the service, just praying, not expecting anything extraordinary to happen. When suddenly everything begins to change. He's caught up into the scene of being in the very presence of God. And God himself is there. Everything else is shrouded. There's this smoke that fills the presence of the temple so that all he can see is just the very presence of God. We're told that all of these seraphims, and seraphim is a Hebrew word that simply means burning or one filled with fire. And so these angelic beings that yet are so distinguishable that he's able to make out that they have these 6 wings, one set to cover the face because they can't look upon the presence of God and not shield themselves in humility. One to cover their feet and to cover all of their nakedness, and one with which to fly. These beings of fire are just crying out one to another in the very presence of God. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord, the God of hosts. It's a phrase that we take up in our Eucharistic liturgy. It's the phrase that marks that transition into the very presence of God as we prepare to change the bread and wine into the very body and blood of Christ. The angels, in their threefold repetition of this holiness of God, the otherness of God. Hebrew had the superlative. Hebrew was able to construct an expression that described the holiness of God. It's this threefold repetition that accentuates and really heightens that sense of the absolute holiness of God. And Isaiah, in that moment, is overwhelmed by his sinfulness, overwhelmed by that sense of failure, overwhelmed by the knowledge of, I'm nothing, I'm a sinner. How could I possibly be present before God? How could I possibly respond in the midst of such incredible beauty of this burning, fiery creatures? Woe is me. Woe is me, for I am a person of unclean lips, living in a land filled with people with unclean lips. This absolute sense of sinfulness, this inability to respond to God. And then one of these burning creatures, these seraphim, come and bring a coal. The fire that cleanses, the fire that heals, the fire that burns, to come and to touch the lips of Isaiah. It's what we sometimes need, to be reminded by the Lord that, yes, you're sinners. Yes, you're not worthy. Yes, you can't do this by yourself. Just as Simon Peter fell down at the feet of Jesus, recognizing his own sinfulness. But the Lord picked him up. And the Lord cleansed the lips of Isaiah to say to him, no, it's not about your worthiness. It's not about your ability to fish or to bring disciples into the kingdom of heaven. It's the question about, are you open? Are you ready? And Isaiah is able then to respond, here I am, send me. Here I am, send me. This call of evangelization, this call of discipleship, this call that recognizes, yes, I am sinful. Yes, together we are sinful. And yet God chooses to reveal himself to us. God chooses to be present to us, to cleanse us, to burn away those areas of sin, to make us worthy. But what will be our response? Will we simply say with Isaiah or with Peter, who fall on their knees, who cover their faces, who say, woe is me, I can't do this. Get away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. Or will we move with Isaiah to that wonderful final response? Here I am, send me. Here I am, send me.